You've missed Dave White doing his King speech pre-show prep, but
Oh, we're on now?
you'll have to live with that. Yes,
What
welcome.
part did they not hear? I did my King speech thing.
Yes.
When I hear,
Do you
this
want to
is
do it
my,
again?
yeah,
Okay.
I'm a thistle sifter. I sift thistles. Ta-da! The King speech.
Burn.
I took my mom to see the King speech when I was gone in Texas, when I was
Yes.
away. And
Still the R-rated version.
still the R-rated, the real version, the
Right.
one with the F's in it. Tons of F's.
Yes.
Well, but pocket, like a little pouches of F's. Like, it's not spread out throughout the entire thing. It's not like the royal family sits around going, F this and F that.
And not
It's
even F's as verbs, just
no,
F's as
it's a
exclamations.
speech exercise that
Right.
Colin,
Firth.
which one? Firth, yeah, not Farrell,
No.
does. Anyway, my mom liked the King's speech.
Oh, good.
She found it to be delightful.
And you are
And,
listening to Linoleum
oh
Knife.
yeah, linoleum knife. I have allergies and boogers and snot right now.
Thanks for
It's
sharing.
all up in my throat, in my nose, in my head. It's everywhere. I'm not sick, but I sound like I'm
No,
sick.
I know. I was that way last week. It's all the rain here, I think, just sort of put all the allergens
But I got
into the
tea.
atmosphere. So yeah,
I
so
got my
that's good.
tea.
Across the table from me is Dave White, film critic for movies.com.
That's true.
Yes.
You're Alonzo Duralde. You're the movie line DVD editor.
Thank you. And we will be actually kind of the reason, not intentionally, that we were talking about the ratings for The King's Speech, but it does bring us to our first movie this week, which is Sucker Punch, which in
That's our first
addition,
movie?
yeah.
I thought you were going to go straight up into the pot of chi
No,
thing.
we'll do that later.
Sorry, I'm sniffling. I'm going to do that for the next 30
That's
minutes.
fine.
So you don't like the sound of
Do you
boogers
need a
then.
handkerchief or anything?
I need to get my head. Yeah.
Why don't you do that?
Start talking about Sucker
Sure,
Punch.
yeah. I mean, the thing about Sucker Punch, in addition to being like a dreadful, dreadful movie,
We got paper towels.
it is somehow a PG-13 rated movie, despite the fact that it's all about like
Whores.
scantily clad,
Whores.
whores, like almost getting raped a lot and shooting a lot of, zombies and robots and stuff.
Well, they're not actually whores. I mean, like, they, in one girl's mind,
Yeah, they're
they're
actually
a
they're
fantasy.
mental patients who are
They're a
fantasy
fantasy whore
whores.
troupe.
Yes, who are also a crack in a second
They're
fantasy.
kind of like burlesque dancers as well. Don't they have to, like, do
Yeah,
shows
they have
and
to do
things?
dances for the men, and
It's
but we
like
never
three
see
levels
them
of
do it.
reality. The girl is,
In a home
her
for
name
the
is, she has
mentally
no name.
insane.
Her name is Baby Doll.
Baby doll, yes.
She's in a home for the
Mentally
mentally
insane,
insane.
my favorite phrase of the year so far.
And
She imagines that she's in a high-class brothel that
because when you're feeling low,
and
that's
you're a
what you
teen
want to
girl,
do.
that's the
You
projection that you
imagine
give
that
yourself.
you are a future
And
hooker.
they're about to lobotomize her, so in her fantasy version, she's about to be sold off as an intact virgin to a high-rolling gambler played by Jon Hamm.
Intact.
Well, the movie brings up her
I know they talk
virginity
about
a lot.
her
It's
purity
almost as
quite a
much as
bit.
Taken does.
Yeah.
They're obsessed with it. And then in the fantasy burlesque house, when she goes into one of her sexy dances, she then goes into a third fantasy realm, which is a pure sort of video game codswallop, where she's
Codswallop. That's a fun word.
She's fighting
Is
World
that a
War
real
One.
word? You didn't make
That's
that
a
word
real
up. That's
word.
an old-timey word that you
Yes.
like.
Yes.
I've seen you. I've edited that out of things that you've written before, because like
You cannot
when
keep me
you turn
down.
no when you turn in things, when we each turn in different pieces to editors, we will read it aloud to one another or let the other one read it first as a sort of like
Did I miss
a final
anything? Did I use
pass.
the same word four
Am I
times
saying
in the
the
same
word same word
paragraph?
four times in the same for three sentences or whatever, you know? And you, I do remember this word because you've tried it. You've tried to insert it into lots of
I
different
have worked
things.
it in
You keep trying
periodically.
to
It's
make
a
it
great
happen. You
word.
keep trying to bring it back.
Codswallop is a great word.
And it's, spell it.
CODSWALLOP.
There's no hyphen.
Nope. One word, codswallop.
Do you know the etymology
I
of
do
this word?
not. I imagine it's probably fish guts or something, but it's basically like the fancy way to say that something is BS,
I
to
know.
say that it's
I'm just
codswallop.
asking you to explain to
Yeah.
the
I think it's a
audience.
great word, and I'm going to keep
It
using
is a
it.
good word, but it's a once a year kind of word, and
For me, it's Christmas every day.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So what? So there's
So, so.
she's not a whore. But she's kind of a sailor in her mind. She's a whore, and then she's also a Sailor Moon.
Yeah, like she's whipping around like machine guns and samurai swords while wearing a little Catholic schoolgirl uniform,
right?
Which is, you know, again, what a teen girl would imagine for herself.
I was told by a lady this week that she actually would imagine that sort of thing for herself.
Was this a lady who's like into naughty role play or something?
No, she's just a fun lady.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, good. She said, "Sure, I would. I would totally imagine myself as that." And I said, "Okay, sure. I don't know ladies, so maybe Zack Snyder consulted with a room full of ladies.
I don't see women coming away from Zack Sucker Snyder Punch
would like for you
feeling empowered
to turn this mental patient into a battalion of whores who
ninjas, rider, tramps, and thieves.
who assault Zeppelins and dragons and space trains and." Mm-hmm. Stuff.
Monorails to Saturn, as Christy Lemire called it this week on What the Flick.
But it's a movie that has like a 47 item list of things that I think are great. Dragons, swords,
robots,
Nazi zombies,
Zeppelins, yeah,
Pixie songs, Stooges songs, Smiths songs.
Bjork songs. And yet...
Girls in whore outfits, PVC corsets, giant, like, wig bumps.
Yeah. And yet...
Tons of violence and kicking. Giant shogun monster warrior things and monks. And it's like, if you said to me, this film contains three of this entire list of 47 things, I would say yes. That's a movie I'll go see, and I will totally enjoy that movie. And I like tons of action. I like people to be killed and stabbed with swords and shot with guns
and
in
this,
the face.
This movie has all 47. Has
all those things.
And yet.
It was so terribly boring.
Oh my God, it's so boring. I went to the snack bar during this movie.
You intentionally went to get
it. I never go to the snack bar during movies, but it was the kind of thing where... Look, I know people who said that the problem they had with Four Weddings and a Funeral was they couldn't help checking them off in their mind
right.
when they got to each one of them.
Get to the funeral
already. Yeah. In this movie, like, there's four things they have to get, and it's very sort of video game level.
Where it's you
have
Scott Pilgrim, but without brains and plus
wit or anything. Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, after the first two where there's, like, you know, where they get the fire by the dragon, and then they get the map by... going to World War One or whatever.
Right.
I was like, oh God, there's going to be two more of these. They have to get two more things.
I was glad when they got the fire.
There's going to be two more of these stupid fantasy sequences. And then I was just like, I'm going to go get some water. I have to leave this theater for a while because I can't take it. I'm so bored.
And then he came back and he goes, what happened?
And Dave didn't even know.
And I go, I don't remember.
Like some happened. Sort of plot thing Something had transpired. Some argument was happening between the whores. And Dave didn't even know. He hadn't left the theater and he couldn't even tell me.
I was thinking about other things. I was a little hungry, and I was wondering what snacks you might be bringing back.
Yeah, so this movie is...
You didn't bring back anything but a bottle of water.
Well, that's what I said. I asked you if you wanted anything, and you said no.
I don't remember that either.
I did.
I was real tired that night. I had just come home from Texas. That was a Wednesday, and I had just come home from Texas.
That's true.
And I was super Xanaxed up because I'm scared to fly, so I take tons of Xanax to get on the airplane.
And even in that state, you weren't enjoying this movie.
Yeah, I was kind of half high.
Yeah.
And even then, I didn't like it.
Because like somebody said on my Twitter feed, this looks like it would only be a movie that was good to shroom to. But I don't even know that I would recommend it for that.
I don't think Xanax and shrooms are the same thing.
No,
but I've never tried the shrooms.
I'm just saying, I don't think this would be a good movie to anything to. It's a terrible, terrible movie. And it is PG-13, Win-Win and The King's
Go ahead, kids.
R. Yeah.
Go do it. Go watch it.
Ugh.
It's say the two things that you said about it when we left the theater. First thing you said was, I'll say the first thing that you said, and then you can say the most important thing that you said. The thing that I've been waiting for you to say in a public manner.
Yes, I've been waiting to say it too.
And on the way out, he looked at me and he said, that was the barf of puke, which made me really happy. Because I was like, I knew I liked you. because of that, and many other reasons. But that's indicative of the many reasons I like you. And then the other thing you said was this following thing, and I said, "Can I use that in my review?" And you were like, "No, I'm going to use it." And you, yeah. No one asked you to review it.
I didn't
do it on What the Flick with Ben.
Yeah.
Wait, was he there? Was you and Christy and Matt? Who was there?
No, Ben was there. That's why I didn't do the Sucker Punch.
And so you did. Like,
so I've been saving it for this podcast. Saving it.
Do it. Say it.
So for this podcast, I can say we've
built it up too much now.
Probably yes. Yeah. Sucker Punch is Speed Racer for people who masturbate to tentacle porn.
I agree with that.
Yes.
Except here's the thing: I super loved Speed Racer.
Oh God!
And I'm the only person in the country that loved Speed Racer
because you looked at it as like an art event.
Well, it kind of was in a way. It was like
Lisa Frank
Starburst fruit chews like scalding my eyes, and I was really happy. And I saw it at the Chinese.
Oh my God,
the big Chinese.
I saw it at the Steve Ross.
Yeah.
That theater on the Warner lot, that huge one.
Yeah.
And I literally staggered out of the theater. Like, when Speed Racer was over, I shambled out to the lobby and found a blank wall in a hallway somewhere and just had to look at it for a second. Because I felt assaulted by that.
But here's the thing.
If it's better than Sucker Punch.
If it were brown.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, Zack Snyder likes everything to be that browny.
Yeah, the sepia.
Coppery color.
And it's weird and mix of periods. Like, it's sort of 50s, sort of 30s. You know, who the hell knows what's going on. But anyway, Sucker Punch is terrible. Do not go see it.
Well, but people are going to go see it anyway because they're going to go see it either because they think film critics don't like action films, which I just read recently.
Someone on Facebook said that.
Which is ridiculous.
And here's the one that always bugs me. Oh, you guys think that every movie has to be an Oscar-winning drama. Well, for one thing, the Oscars are crap, and we've established that. Second of all, that kind of crack when thrown at film critics ignores the fact that there are good...
It's racist against film.
There are good entertainments and there are bad entertainments.
Right.
And anyone can tell you that that's true. The biggest idiot who complains about film critics, you know, on internet comment boards has movies that they love and movies that they hate. And somehow, even though... You know, they can hate a movie that is meant to be nothing but entertainment. When a film critic says that a movie that is designed to be entertaining is garbage, then we're snobs who don't know the difference between blah, blah, blah. We can't just have fun at the movies and blah, 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 blah. Lies. All lies. And I'm sick of it. Get to my nerves.
Calm down. Calm down. Film critic.
Well, I am. People are disparaging my trade.
And it is a trade.
It is.
Although you make less money doing it than if you had gone to actual trade
school. I know. If I had learned how to make shoes or something, I'd be doing much better right now.
You've been a cobbler.
There you go.
You could still learn to do it.
To cobble?
Daniel Day-Lewis could teach
you. That's true.
He cobbles. Does he still cobble?
I think he only cobbled briefly, and it got blown out of proportion. I think like he had like a 2-day internship.
I think that it would be great if he were still a cobbler. Like if you could go to his house and get shoes made.
I told you what my dream
make
like
me a size 11 shoe, Daniel Day Lewis.
What my dream like sort of like trade would be.
You told me this?
Yeah.
Was this on Wednesday night
when you were on Xanax? No, I don't think so. I want to go to France and learn how to make the Chanel.
You want to go be that lady's intern?
Yes.
Because no one else is doing it.
I know.
No one else is doing it. There's this thing. What we are referring to is this amazing miniseries that was on IFC, Sundance?
Sundance Channel. It was made for French television.
It was made for French TV. It was called Signer Chanel. And it was all about the construction the making of one
Chanel collection.
One Chanel haute couture selection. Yes. So not just not a ready-to-wear line that you would see in stores. Like the line that Oprah comes to the show.
Right.
Because she does.
That Karl Lagerfeld personally,
Karl Lagerfeld and his seamstresses, they personally construct this thing and that you buy, you come to the show and you place your order. And you say, Karl Lagerfeld, make me that dress. And then they do. So if you're Oprah, you say, I need a size 16 or whatever, then they're going to do it for you.
Yes.
And it's going to cost you $25,000. I'm not making that up.
I would have thought more.
$30,000, $35,000, $40,000, who knows? Yeah. But it's like at least that amount of money. I'm not making up that number either. Yeah. That's like a genuine, that's how much it costs to do this. So anyway, this whole show is about this. It's a five-part miniseries. There is a 1,000-year-old lady who lives on a horse farm in the middle of France alone, and she's like 5 feet tall, maybe, and she's like
Edna mode.
She's basically a tiny, tiny little lady who does all the braiding. And if you have ever seen a woman in one of those braidy sort of Chanel jackets, that's what this is. There's someone does that braiding by hand, and this is, and she's the one lady, and she talks about on the show, on the series, how she's had intern after intern, and they all quit because it's too hard, it's too difficult, and no one wants to learn, take the time to learn what she does, because it requires, like, apparently infinite patience.
Yeah.
It's like doing little paintings on the heads of pins or something.
and when she dies,
she has this loom that's like 30 feet long. It like fills up a whole room, and she's like running, that's like pushing it and everything. And it's like, you don't know where she has the strength to operate this machine. So yeah, that would be a good job for you.
Because when that woman dies, there will be no more Chanel braids.
Is it going to be allowed? Would you be allowed to do it with your glasses? Because you're a total four eyes. What if you did it wrong? You're also kind of colorblind.
Well, I'm not. No, you say that. It's not true.
Well, you can't pick out clothes to wear for yourself.
Oh, dude. Yeah, well, maybe if I wore black t-shirts and jeans everywhere, then I would have a look.
Look, I've got a uniform.
You know, I'm sure I'd put on one of those things like that the art restorers wear, those giant goggles with the big magnifying things. I'd put that on over my four eyes.
Right.
And then I could learn how to make Chanel braid.
I think that's a good.
That's my that was.
I'm going to be a butcher. Keep us in pork.
That opens this week. The lesbian butcher.
The lesbian butcher shop. I'm going to go down to there. I'm going to say I'm thinking of changing careers.
Are you taking on apprentices?
Are you taking on butcher apprentices?
You would look really hot in a white apron.
I would.
And a little paper cap.
I would look really great in that outfit. I think that would be.
Yeah.
Plus, I'd like to just be cutting things all day.
Just chopping, don't cut off your fingers.
Chopping meats all day long in a 50-degree temperature environment. True,
which you would love that.
Cold, I could be in a refrigerated room.
You would be in a fridge all day in a meat locker.
Heat cleavering meats.
And looking at viscera. That sounds like your dream job.
That sounds like I'm going to quit movie reviewing and I'm going to go become a butcher.
Okay. Well, as long as you keep doing the podcast.
All right. So talk about potiche. Speaking of France,
potiche is it's a French word that means like something that is beautiful but useless, and so it's an expression for like a trophy wife. And Catherine Deneuve stars as a potiche, as the trophy wife of this guy.
Wait a second, she's like 80. She can't be the trophy wife.
Well,
trophy wife is by definition like a hot,
not trophy wife like the hot second wife, but in terms of she's this beautiful sort of ornament who doesn't really do anything with her life, and her husband runs this umbrella factory, and then the when having let's say testy relations with the union folks, he has a heart attack and has to go to the hospital for a while, and she takes over. And turns out is great at it, and like is a really good negotiator. She's great at umbrella factorying. Yeah, and she has all these great ideas, and she works with like their son and daughter to like kind of develop new markets and stuff. And Dave just stuffed a wad of paper towel up his nose. It's real charming. And anyway, so it's the new film from François Ozon, who's one of my favorite directors these days. He did Eight Women and Swimming Pool and Criminal Lovers, a bunch of other films.
Water Drops on Burning Rocks.
And it's a really charming kind of, it's almost sort of Neil Simon-y in a way, but smarter and funnier and politically relevant, because, I mean, God knows all the stuff about labor versus management is very, very timely right now.
Right.
But it's set in 1976 and like very much kind of doesn't embrace it in a cartoony way, but you can tell he's having a good time with like the decor of the kitchen.
So it's a happier version of that French movie Human Resources.
Much happier, yes.
Since that movie was not happy.
It was
a total
bummer, yeah. But it was
a good movie,
And it's Catherine.
You should go to Netflix and look for Human Resources.
Yes.
Laurent Conte or something like that. Is that his name?
Yeah. And what's the other film he did?
I'm forgetting the name
now. But yeah, he's good. Anywho, Potiche, lots of fun. Just opened in L.A. and New York, I think, and is making its way around. But, Deneuve and Gerard Depardieu, who are, have been making movies together since the Pangea. And they're still really charming together. And she's great. And the movie's really funny. I had a good time.
I went to see Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Roderick rules.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid 2. The number one movie.
No.
Oh, there's
the
no
title. The title is Diary of a Wimpy Kid: Roderick rules.
Okay.
Yeah.
This weekend's number one movie. And sorry. How was it?
It was real boring.
Ah.
Yeah.
And you kind of liked the first one, though.
First one I liked because it was like a fun, smart movie about how middle school sucks. And middle school does suck. And that movie, you know, he was the runtiest kid in a sixth grade class. Oh, I'm sorry, the second runtiest kid in a sixth grade class. But full of himself, all the same. Mm-hmm. And the movie systematically sort of takes him down a peg, you know, every chance it gets.
Right.
Because he can't believe that he's not super popular.
Ah.
He's got all these charms and his he's entitled to popularity.
I see.
And in the meantime, what he does is treat all of his nerdy little geeky friends who are still sort of behaving like little boys.
Mm-hmm.
He treats them like jerk. He treats them like a jerk. Hmm. He's a jerk to them. And so the movie teaches him to be nice to his friends by the end of the movie and to, you know, chill out. It gets better, you know. And
one of our listeners asked us if we would
record. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, no.
But the
but thank you for the thought. We appreciate it.
The but yeah, this one, it takes all the action out of the school and sets it in their house, mm-hmm. in the kid's house. And he's got this older brother who tormented him a lot in the first movie, but this is all that it is in the second movie.
Roderick,
trying to make them get along. And the parents, who were just sort of background in the first movie, mm-hmm. are front and center in this one, and they're like, you're gonna bond, and you're gonna behave, and you're gonna, and I'm just like, who cares? Like, this is not, this is, oh, get along with your brother? That doesn't happen until you're 35. If ever. And so the thing about it is that it's just sort of, it's aimless and it's not witty. Like the first one was funny. Like they did this thing in the first one that was this stinky piece of cheese on the tarmac on the blacktop at the playground, mm-hmm. and everyone, no one would go near it, and it was just molding, and it's just stayed there for like a year, and someone touched it, and he had the cheese touch, and then he would go, and he touched someone, and then that person had the cheese touch, like it transferred from one like person cooties. To another, yeah, and so stuff like that was in the first movie, but this movie doesn't have, the only thing funny this movie has is a movie within a movie that they're watching, a horror film called The Foot, that is a haunted foot that attacks people, and that's it. It's just,
it's about this foot. See,
I want them to go. What I want is, see, in the first movie, Chloe Moretz was this eighth grader pariah, but happy to be one. She would sit under the bleachers and read Howl, which is hilarious, and she would speak, you know, these wise, like knowing words because she's already 35 to the kids and be like, you're gonna realize someday that none of this matters. She goes, and then in this movie, of course, she's too famous now. She's off making the new Scorsese movie, so she's not going to be in this Wimpy Kid 2. And she's not in this movie, but what I want the next one to be, because now there's going to be a next one.
For sure. Well, yeah, the books are crazy popular.
The books are crazy popular, and the first movie was a big hit, and this one beat Sucker Punch at the box office, which cracks me up, because it is better than Sucker Punch.
And they sold a lot more kid tickets, so
yeah.
Eat it.
The... what I want the next one to be is that he becomes the Chloe Moretz eighth grade pariah, like really an outcast, and then it turns Freaks and Geeksy. That's what I want.
Yeah,
that's not gonna happen.
When you mentioned her as sort of the eighth grade pariah with all the wisdom, it reminded me. Remember, there's that guy that the three geeks on Freaks and Geeks go talk to.
Yes,
with the little mustache.
Dungeons and Dragons guy.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
who's like their sage? You know. Okay. God, I missed that show.
Why do you want to talk about Mildred Pierce? Why?
Because it is the new Todd Haynes movie. Even if it's airing on HBO, it is the new Todd Haynes movie.
But it's a TV movie.
It's a miniseries. And it's a miniseries that I think, you know, it makes interesting use of the miniseries.
I think Todd Haynes is really great.
Format in that it's a really, really faithful adaptation of the James M. Cain novel. I know you are. You're the world's biggest fan of Velvet Goldmine. yes. One year, Todd Haynes was at the LA Film Critics Awards because he got an award.
Tell this story.
Of course I am. Because he got an award. He was Far From Heaven and had won a couple of awards. And so I went up and said hi to him because I've met him a couple times over the years. And Dave was with me and I said...
And I was being silent because that's what I do.
Yes.
I don't talk to anybody that is well known. And I, even if I have the chance, I don't do it. I turn my back and I get out of the room as fast as I can, if I possibly can.
So it was incumbent upon me to say, and Dave is the world's biggest fan of Velvet Goldmine.
I was mortified.
Hey, what did he say?
He said, right on, man.
There you go. Yeah.
Which was nice of him, you know, but like, I just felt like a dumbass.
Please, he was lovely. Anyway, so no, I think we should talk about Boulder Pierce because it's the new Todd Haynes movie, even if it's a miniseries.
You're right.
And I had not read the James M. Cain novel before this, but thumbing through it now, I'm realizing that Haynes and his co-writer, like, really take.
You should explain that they sent you the entire movie.
Yeah, I've seen the
DVD.
Whole thing.
They sent you a copy of the movie tie-in book.
Yes, yeah. Which I appreciated. So I watched the whole thing, thanks to the folks at HBO, and then I've been looking at the book that they sent me, and it's amazing how faithful the miniseries is. So if you've seen the Joan Crawford 1945 movie, this is not in any way trying to remake that film. If anything, it's going back to the source material and trying to really be more true to that. For example, there is no murder in the book. The murder that sets up Mildred Pierce and sets up the whole flashback structure in the police station, yada, yada, doesn't happen. Not in the book, not in the HBO version. And Kate Winslet is certainly not trying to be Joan Crawford, God knows. Joan Crawford's great in that movie, don't get me wrong, but Winslet's doing her own kind of version of this, but it's still a really interesting story. And, you know, it's beautifully put together, really well acted. You know, there's amazing people worked on it. Ed Lachman did the cinematography, and Ann Roth did the costumes, and Carter Burwell did the score. And, you know, frankly, as someone who is dealing with a crappy economy and trying to make ends meet, I very much found the movie super relevant.
So, I'm going to watch it.
So I thought we should talk about it this week. But you nonetheless
my favorite Mildred Pierce story from our home this week has been yesterday. We went to see Hop, which we're not going to talk about today.
No.
But before it started, it's a 10 a.m. screening. We're surrounded by little children. You're sitting next to me reading Mildred Pierce while we're waiting for the movie to start. And I'm sitting next to you reading Madame Bovary.
Women in Fiction Week.
It's Women in Fiction Week here at this time. Here's what I learned about Madame Bovary. She's a dick. She's stupid and she's a dick.
She's
and yet I keep reading this book, Emma, because it's a fascinating, really great book, obviously. I mean, it's, you know, Flaubert and it's a classic and all that stuff. But man, she's a dick. There is nothing nice
or good
about her.
Whose life will she ruin next?
Yeah. Now, that was Mildred Pierce is a 5-hour movie.
Yeah.
And you're fixing to go see a 5-hour movie tonight.
Is it 5 hours?
It's both parts of Kill Bill plus extra parts.
Oh, I guess it is, yeah.
It might even be 6 hours. You're never coming home from this movie. It's just going to keep going.
Forever.
Forever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to see you come back from sitting in a New Beverly seat for 5 hours and tell me how
well you would if you weren't going to be in bed at 9.
I'm not going. Well, no, I love the New Beverly. I love going to see a movie at the New Beverly. As long as it is under 2 hours long, I will go see a movie at the New Beverly because they have these great new seats. It's all renovated. The whole place, by the way.
Yes. If you haven't been,
if you live in Los Angeles or if you're visiting Los Angeles, you want to go to some cool old movies, go to the New Beverly. They show everything and
they show
along with
lots of great double
along
features.
With CineFamily, they are the two awesomest places in town. But their new renovation, their new sound, their new screen, their new everything.
Yeah, this place used to be like mildewy and run down, and their new owner, Quentin Tarantino, has put quite
a bit. Is he the owner now?
I think so. That's my understanding. Okay. He's put a lot of money into it. There's a new marquee.
Phil.
Their old marquee.
Our friend Phil, like, basically runs everything there, doesn't he?
Yeah. The old marquee is the picture that you see actually on this show when it comes up in your iPod. That's
that is the old marquee.
That is Charge Over Volcano. Yeah. That's the old marquee of the New Beverly. They have a new marquee.
But
they
still have a problem.
The seats aren't wide enough for David.
I'm a large man, and the seats are too little. They brought those seats in from the time when people were shorter.
I'm not any less wide
teenier
than you, and I'm okay with it. My problem
I feel squeezed.
My problem with the place is the rake. There's not a good enough slope from the back to the front.
Oh,
so
that's fine. You're tall.
Not tall enough. I got to sit in the front row because otherwise I have someone's head in my way. But anyway, yeah, they're about to do a week-long run. It's the first time it's ever shown in the U.S. It's Kill Bill. What is it? The Whole Bloody Mess or something? Anyway, it's the ultimate director's cut of Kill Bill, and it's both movies put together and additional footage that hasn't been seen in either of them. And I've actually never seen Kill Bill at all, so this is my first time of
nothing. You haven't seen part one or part two?
Nope. You've shown me a few clips, but I've never seen them.
It's real cool.
Yeah, well, because yeah. it was in my post Pulp Fiction hating Quentin Tarantino phase.
I would go. I would go if I were being able to sit like on our couch.
Right. I hear you.
To watch it.
But yeah, it's running for a week, and I'm going to go see it tonight, and I will report next week about it and about how the seat was for 5 hours.
And I saw tons of movies for the second time while I was in Texas, besides King's Speech. Yeah. I saw The Prize Winner of Defiance, Ohio,
which is terrific.
Which is a totally underrated movie.
Yeah, it came and went very quickly. I don't think a lot of people never even know exists.
But I finally got what someone was telling me earlier this week about why they didn't like it.
Uh-huh.
And here's what a lot of critics at the time didn't like it either. It was they thought it was too nice, and that because the movie focused, much like the book, the memoir that it's based on, mm-hmm. focuses on the mother's just sort of supernatural amounts of optimism.
Right.
Because
she's living in poverty with
because she's living in hell, basically. Yeah. That because the film was faithful to the book and showed this incredibly optimistic woman who would not crack under the difficult circumstances of her life and would not ever even fight back very much against her drunk husband. And he wasn't abusive to her. He was violent with objects, but
he put a million kids in her and then didn't make any money.
Right. And what he did make, he squandered all on booze.
Booze, right.
And she took care of the family by winning these like jingle writing contests in the 50s and 60s. And it's a true story. It really happened. There's a paper trail to back it up. It's not like one of these fake memoirs.
Yeah.
Where was I going with this?
Oh, I had no idea.
It's such a kind and gentle movie and so loving that I don't think people are used to seeing that sort of thing anymore.
People dismissed it as being like, oh, it's a TV movie.
It's too cutesy or something. And it was
very appropriate for the story.
Totally, totally spot on appropriate for what the subject matter is. And my mom, I watched it with my mom because she loves the book. She just, our friend Crystal read the book to her.
Oh, cool.
And, my mom lives in a nursing home. And so that's where I was. I went to go see her.
Right.
And she lives in a nursing home very close to one of my brothers. And our friend goes and reads to her every week, and that's what that was about. So when I go to town, I take her out of the nursing home. We go see movies and stuff. But we watched a lot of DVDs this time around because she hasn't been feeling well. And so we watched Prize Winner, Defiance, Ohio. We watched – we took her to see The King's Speech.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched The Fighter.
Yeah.
On your Academy DVD. And don't worry. She's 68 and she's just had a stroke patient in a nursing home. Yeah, she's not going to pirate the movie.
She did not put it online.
Yeah, that's not happening. And we watched True Grit the same way. And she loved them all, and it was cool. Nice. And I realized that I didn't pay enough attention to The Fighter while I was actually watching it the first time because so much of it seemed new to me. I was like,
oh, really?
Where was I when the scene was happening? Like,
were you on Xanax?
Sometimes, you know, when I'm watching a movie for work, I mean, sometimes I'm being a good film critic and sometimes I'm thinking about jelly donuts. I mean, like, if the movie's not fully holding me. But the thing was that The Fighter really was a great movie. And I don't know where my mind was that day. I know I remember really liking it. But some of the stuff that I saw it again, when I saw it again, I was this is fresh.
I think also you see movies, you write about them, and then you forget them.
That is also true. So I'm on a hamster wheel. Yeah,
it probably just didn't stick in your mind.
Nothing stays
you probably
in
caught
my short-term memory, you know, for very long. I just am like, I see it, I write about it, I go, I see the next thing. And then it leaves my head. Yeah. I don't have time to go see things twice.
I mean, sometimes I look back at my like Rotten Tomatoes list of movies that I've reviewed, and I'm like, wait, what what was that? What movie was that? Right. I don't even remember seeing
something
it
with a really
about.
Generic title, you know, yeah. And you're like, what was that movie? Huh? Did I see that movie?
Yeah, I have to click on it and go, you're like, oh, yeah, I reviewed that movie. Right. Yeah, it's crazy. All right, we need to wrap up. So you have
is it 30 minutes time?
It's a little over, in fact.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So you have a DVD pick of the week.
Well, I have a crazy story about True Grit.
Oh, all right. I don't think no one's complaining the show's too long.
We're so watching True Grit. And my mom is young. She had the stroke young. She's only 68. So that means she's like 20 years younger than like everyone else in this nursing home. And this isn't funny on any level, but it's just, it's one of those sort of details about life in a nursing home that you realize if you're in one every day, that's just a fact of life. Yeah. People are dying all around you.
Yeah. Oh, and, God, you're going to tell this story?
And my mom has had several roommates because she's very particular. And so they tend to put the late stage Alzheimer's people in with my mom so that they don't bother her too much because they're kind of bedridden. They don't know where they are. They don't talk very much. And so her latest roommate died. Mm-hmm. And we'd been waiting for that to happen. Like she'd been moved to a hospice room with a hospice nurse and her right. family was all around her. And then there was a nurse's assistant who...
She's new.
She's not new.
Oh, she's not?
No.
Oh.
She's really well-meaning, and she really loves my mom, and she's really good with my mom and takes care of her really well. But she doesn't know when to say things and when not to say things. And she walks past our room and just sticks her head in the door and says, "Yep, she died," and then walked on.
Wow, that's some grief counseling right there. You should mention this happened during the last 5 minutes of True Grit.
Yeah, it happened during the last 5 minutes of True Grit, and I was like, I can't even believe this just happened. What are you saying? You know. Meanwhile, this is a fantastic nursing home. I have to say, they're so attentive and so well, you know, run and they take care of my mom really, really well. And the head of nurses was, you know, prepping us for it, you know, for this death of her roommate, and saying, you know, we want it to be a very gentle process for your mom and stuff like that. She goes, we don't want this to be, you know, just abrupt, slammed down on her abruptly or whatever. And so she was
told
taking all
assistant.
These steps to make sure that happened, and I was on board, and we had sort of, you know, prepped my mom a little bit for it, like, this is going to happen in the next few days, and so be ready for it. And then here comes this nurse's assistant. Just going, yep, she died. Gotta go. You know, just like walks on. And of course, my mom cried for a little while. But I was like, you knew this was happening. You knew this was coming. And you didn't know her. And, you know, I understand that it's hard. And I'm sorry for her, the nurse's aide. She doesn't know any better. She takes good care of you, but she doesn't know any better than to say,
yep, she died.
It was almost like a comedy movie. Like she's just sticking her head in the door, like, "Yep, she's dead."
Like a laugh-in thing. She
opens
like
the
door,
like,
and then...
like, "Suck it to me," you know. Like it was just like that. It was so, it was terribly wrong, and yet I don't know why it makes me laugh that she did it that way.
You know what? When you have a parent in the hospital, you have to develop gallows humor.
Everything,
or you're sunk.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, believe it. I mean, my mom is super. Like, she laughs at all the horrible things that go on. I mean, in like you say, that gallows humor kind of way. But yeah. I also realized that True Grit is just awesome. Like, I mean, again saw it the first time, reviewed it, said it was great, but I do like the opportunity. When I'm there in Texas and I'm watching stuff for the second and possibly third time with my mom.
Yeah, because we don't get too rare. I mean, it's rare. Because
then I do see how some things that I thought were, well, that's very good. Like, I think to myself, perhaps I was underpraising this film the first time around. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, it's better than you thought.
It was better even than I imagined that I remember it being the first time. I have a DVD recommendation that they've just put out. A Boy Named Charlie Brown and Snoopy Come Home.
Yes.
On one DVD.
Yes. Actually, it's two DVDs, but it's sold together.
It's two DVDs?
Yeah.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sold together. These are the only two Peanuts features that you actually need. Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown is fun.
Yeah.
But not on par with these first two.
No.
And here's why.
And Bon Voyage, Charlie Brown is not very good.
The first two are... deeply anxiety-ridden films. They are.
Which makes them true to the comic
strip. Which makes them true to the comic strip, and which makes them, like, kind of harrowing for children to watch.
God,
like,
yeah.
But I'm glad, when I was a little kid, these movies were brand new in theaters, and so I saw them in theaters. And I don't remember feeling, like, traumatized by them, but I do remember them both making me very sad while watching them. I felt so sad for Charlie Brown at the end of A Boy Named Charlie Brown because he's just lost this giant spelling bee and he comes home and no one cares. No one cares that he was there. No one cares that he lost. Everyone's going about their business. It's like he wasn't even gone. And then someone starts singing, and I don't know who's singing these songs in the film, but there's a song called A Boy Named Charlie Brown in the film, and it's what they sing over the final part. Mm-hmm. And it is the saddest song.
Oh, God.
And you're like, you can be 6 years old, like I was when I first saw the movie, and you will get, for the first time in your six-year-old life, it's always going to be bad for Charlie Brown. Mm. Life is never going to be good for Charlie Brown. And you leave the theater, and you're a kid, and you're like, I feel sad for Charlie Brown. And you love him a little more. You feel protective of him almost because you want his life to be better. That's a good movie. That's a good movie for kids to get that kind of like experience with empathy and stuff.
I cried my eyes out at
Snoopy Come Home is
when
brutal.
Snoopy decides that he's going to leave Charlie Brown and go live with like his original owner because she's sick and she needs him. And they throw this like going away party for him. It's like
that.
This testimonial where they all get up and talk about how great he was. And all the kids start crying, talking about how great Snoopy is. And I started crying. And every time I saw that movie as a kid, I would always cry at that scene.
And then there's
I knew it was coming.
And then there's another song that happens where they're apart.
Mm.
And again, Charlie Brown, I think it's the kids who does the voice of Charlie Brown, is singing this song about missing Snoopy.
Mm.
And the song is I don't remember all the words, but it's about like how things change just when you think they're going to be good and something horrible happens and life changes and there's nothing you can do about it. That's the song. And I look back now as a grown-up on these movies and I think, these are tough. Movies for kids. I mean, they're also really funny because they're the Peanuts kids.
Yeah.
But
I think the 70s was that brief window where you could get away.
Where you could get away with like
really
putting in a tough
bummer kids movie.
Bummer message into a kids movie about like the realities of life, and then as long as you picked it back up again and gave it kind of a happier ending, because Snoopy Come Home is a happy ending.
It does.
A Boy Named Charlie Brown just kind of ends.
Yeah, no, it's grim
with him being like kind of sad about the spelling.
I remember he like comes home on the bus. And it's at night, and like no one's there to meet him, and it's just God. So yeah, so it's the cinematic equivalent of reading Louise Fitzhugh's "Nobody's Family Is Going to Change."
You just flew over the heads of every single person listening.
Look,
to this,
they can Google
because you didn't even know
they can
what
Google
that book was.
Louise Fitzhugh.
When we
wrote,
heard about it on like what National
NPR
Public Radio,
Louise Fitzhugh wrote Harry the Spy, which is one of our favorite books from childhood. And this is one of her lesser known books. And oh my God, it's really about, it's about like a little girl who wants to be a lawyer and a little boy who wants to be a dancer and how their parents don't want that for either of
their
them.
Their parents are jive turkeys.
Yeah. Because the
I think they even use language like that in the book, which is why we read the book.
It's dated,
not aged well.
But the father is a lawyer and he wants the boy to be a lawyer. He doesn't want the girl to be a lawyer. And the whole book is about them trying to sort of convince the parents otherwise. And then at the end, you basically learn that nobody's family is going to change.
Right.
And the parents are set in their ways and they're not going to do anything. And it's like, oh my God.
Tough it out, kids.
Yeah. You basically wait till you're old enough to leave home and then do what you want.
Right.
And screw your parents because they're never going to care about your dreams. The end.
Hooray.
So on that uplifting note,
goodbye.
Thank you for joining us.
Follow us on Twitter. We only have 34 people on Twitter, and that's stupid.
Yeah, we would like more Twitter followers.
We'll do more
on the feed to
tell
make it more interesting. It's LinoleumCast. It's at LinoleumCast on Twitter, twitter.com/LinoleumCast.
You need to give me the password so I can begin
writing,
making
things.
It
great.
An entertaining destination.
Please,
for
I would love this. I would love some help from you.
You're failing at doing
on
that.
On anything, I would love some help.
You're
from
failing
because you're not doing anything on this show.
I'm being just what I'm being right now.
Okay,
which
besides
is
that,
amazing.
And you can.
And I'm sniffling and I'm blowing my nose.
Yes, and we always love getting your feedback at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
If it's praise,
whatever it is, linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Drop
I
us
prefer
a line.
Praise.
Praise would be nice. Lots, but lots we'll take of, what we can get. And you know, tell your friends, share the show, and join us next time.
Bye.